I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have our friend Jerry Branum back again to continue our discussion on 1980. A couple of weeks ago, we talked to Jerry about the 1980 Mr. Olympia, and today we're going to continue our discussion of 1980 in review as far as bodybuilding is concerned. So we're going to talk about the Mr. America contest that was won by Gary Leonard in 1980, and it was a very big show. I think it was held in California, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember that show when I was looking at the pictures of Muscle and Fitness, that Arnold was in the audience watching it, and he was looking really big. He had big arms, so of course nobody knew that Arnold was going in the Mr. Olympia a couple weeks later. We're also going to talk about the 1980 Mr. Universe, which is a contest not really discussed that much. It was held in the Philippines, and that particular year, 1980, the American team did not win any divisions, which was very unusual for back then, because America sometimes would win all the divisions, or at least they would win most of the divisions. And in this particular year, America did not win one weight class. So they had the lightweight, middleweight, light heavy, and heavy, and America did not win any. So we're going to talk in detail about that. And then we're also going to talk about the Night of the Champions contest from 1980 that was won by Chris Dickerson. And last week we did an article I read from Roger Schwab in An Old Iron Man, where he talked about the Night of the Champions. And this week I'm also going to have another article from the Night of the Champions that was also in that same issue of Iron Man. It was written by Steve Robinson, and it's another viewpoint. It's called Another Viewpoint of the Night of the Warriors. So we will read that as soon as our interview with Jerry Branum is over with. All right, before we get to that, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. So what else is going on? We're already, more than halfway through January already. The year is flying by as we get into the new year, 2021. I hope things are good with you guys. I hope everybody's able to go to the gym and train. I know this COVID virus is still in full effect, and a lot of the states are reaching peak numbers. So hopefully they will get this vaccine out this year, and we will have a better year than last year, but it looks like it's going to kind of be sort of the same thing. I just saw they moved the Arnold Classic all the way back to October. The thing I saw on Facebook, it said it was October 30th and 31st, which I'm assuming means the Mr. Olympia again will be in December, probably right before Christmas again, and probably right in Orlando again, I'm thinking. Because from what I hear, Vegas is kind of shut down. So it looks like things are being pushed back to the end of the year. I am getting a lot of requests for contest prep, though, so that's good to hear. So it looks like a lot of the local shows are going on. I'm training a girl now for a natural figure competition. So she's competing in a natural show in the OCB, which is a natural organization. So I'm really excited about that. She's trying to get her pro card. And training a few more people just with the 12-week challenge. And I got a few more people asking about contest prep. So it looks like a lot of people are getting ready to compete again. I know a lot of people had to take last year off. So hopefully they'll keep those shows going this year and they'll find a way to hold them, even with all this COVID stuff. Let's see. I got some emails from last week's show where we did the tribute to Peter McGough, which I thought was really well done. I really liked the way that was put together, where we got to actually hear Peter's voice from the different interviews I did with him over this podcast the last 3.5 years. I think I had 5 different interviews with Peter. One of them we did with Wayne Galash, which was really, really well done. And I really liked that one. And we also did another one with Lonnie Tepper. And then I also talked to Peter a couple times by himself, including this last year in 2020, which was the last time I actually got to talk to Peter before he passed away at the end of December. So on my Facebook page, Tim Wilkins, who is a friend of mine from the Florida area, and Tim was one of the commentators at the Mr. Olympia this year, he said, Peter was one of a kind, a giant in the sport. I'll have to listen to this one for sure. Maz said, I've listened to all of these and I will be doing so again. When Peter talks about bodybuilding, it's akin to David Attenborough talking about the natural world. They both exude a level of knowledge, experience, and charisma that is a pleasure to behold. Gary Bartlett said, well done, John. Peter's memory will always be with us. Thanks to your podcast, we can always listen to his words and remember a special man that played such an important part in the history of bodybuilding. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that Peter is gone. And Tim Gardner, my friend from out here in Florida, who is also a big contest promoter, said Peter was a voice that we can never forget. And the best comment I got was from Peter's wife, Anne, who wrote to me and told me she was listening to it, and it really, really touched her that she got a chance to listen to Peter's voice again. So that was definitely the best comment I got. I was actually thinking of Anne as I put together the tribute to Peter. I thought, you know, this would be great that she could actually hear Peter's voice again, like she said, and hear his words. Like I said, you could do other tribute shows where people talk about him, but I think it's better that we hear from the person himself. So rest in peace, Peter McGough. I'm glad everybody liked that, and I hope you guys out there liked it as well. If anybody has any emails you want to send me, you can send them to me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I did get a few emails from Nick Rizzitello. Nick was the winner of my fall fitness challenge, which ended in December, and he was very excited about the progress he made. And I actually did an interview with Nick that is on my YouTube channel, which is under my name, John Hansen. And if you want to check that out, it was really inspiring to hear Nick because he overcame PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which he got from his job as a police officer. And he said since he had the PTSD, he's been unable to really concentrate and he got out of shape. So by having this fitness challenge in front of him with an itinerary of what he was supposed to do every day, as far as his meals, as far as his training, I actually even wrote out his workouts each week. Nick was able to really get over this PTSD and or just overcome it and reach his goals. So Nick sent me an email and he said, hey, John, I just received the books and the DVDs in the mail. These were the books and DVDs Nick got for taking first place. And he says, I have one issue. I don't know which one to read first. I'm so excited to read them and watch the DVDs. As I said in our interview, and I'm sorry I kept talking to you so much, you have truly changed my life and helped me in more ways than I can express. I've had so many people reach out to my wife on her Facebook asking about you and the Transformation Challenge. Some females asked if they could do it. I left you a review on Apple Podcasts for the Legends Show. I hope you got it. Keep up the great work. The old competitions you've been posting are unbelievable. And on Apple Podcast, Nick did leave a review and he said, this is the best bodybuilding podcast. You can listen to John and you immediately imagine being in the gym with the legends of bodybuilding from every era. You receive priceless knowledge from every single episode. John is a great interviewer and his guests are amazing and interesting. Unlike other podcasts, this isn't about controversy or hating on others. It's about the true love of the sport. It's a great escape from the roller coaster of life. If you're a fan of bodybuilding, this is pure gold. All right, Nick, thank you for that comment on Apple iTunes, and also thanks for your email. And what Nick was saying about the old competitions, I've been posting some old competitions on my YouTube page. So I put up some clips from the 1987 Night of the Champions that Gary Stridham won. That was Gary's pro debut, and Mike Ashley was second. Ron Love was third. John Natashek was in it. Robbie Robinson was in it. So check those out. I also posted some clips from the 1990 Ironman Pro Invitational. That was the very first Ironman that Sean Ray won in Redondo Beach. And Mike Ashley was also second in that one too. And Gary Stridham was in that. And Vince Comerford, JJ Marsh. So check those out on my YouTube channel. They're getting a lot of views, so people love seeing those old clips of the old bodybuilding shows. I'm heading into my fourth week of training now since my surgery, so my workouts have been going pretty good. Strength's going up slowly each week, which I thought it would, and I'm just going to start hitting the diet a little harder and try and get a little bit leaner, maybe do some photo shoots around my birthday or maybe a little bit after that, which is like in a couple more months. I used to do photo shoots every couple years, but with these two hernia surgeries I had the last 2 years, it kind of screwed everything up. So I want to get back in shape and get real lean and see how my abs look after this surgery and see what my body looks like now that I'm, what will I be, 58 in March. So got to check in every couple years and see if you still got it. So that's what I'm planning on doing for this year. Oh, and I also want to mention my John Hansen Fitness Challenge, which was supposed to start last week. We moved it back another week. So the official starting date is today, which is January 18th. But if you're still interested in joining, it is still on my website, johnhansenfitness.com. So just go to the page. You could still join up and check it out. And you might be a few days later than everybody else, or maybe even a week late, but who cares? It's a 12-week challenge. You could still make an incredible amount of progress in 12 weeks or 11 weeks or 10 weeks. So join that if you're interested, the John Hansen Fitness Challenge, and that'll end in April. So what you'll get, if you don't know, is once you join up at the challenge, I will write out a workout routine for you. I will also write out a personalized diet program for you. And then I check in with you every week. So I check in to see where your waist is at, where your weight is at, and then I write up new workouts for you each week, and I keep you accountable. So by the end of the 12 weeks, you will be in fantastic shape, and you'll make great progress. And if you check out my website, you'll see some of the physique transformations that some of my former clients have made. It's amazing. No matter what your age is, even some of the guys that are a little bit older, they've lost so much fat off their waist, and they've added muscle, they've added strength. So it's amazing when you really are focused on a goal and you work at it every day, how much you can accomplish in 12 weeks. It blows my mind every time I do these challenges, how great some of the progress is from some of these guys. So if you are interested in getting in shape for the new year, do that. Go to johnhansenfitness.com and sign up for my John Hansen Fitness Challenge. If I get your registration this week, then we will still be able to do it. So check that out. All right, so that's all I got for my opening. Here is our interview with Jerry Branum, where we talk about the year 1980 in review. Here we go. Well, let's move on and talk about the other shows in 1980. I want to talk about the Mr. America that year, which was a huge contest.
Gary Leonard, right?
Yeah, Gary Leonard was a winner. And by 1980, man, it was a huge show because they had a lot of bodybuilders from all over the country going in there.
Right. You know, it's funny because I have a poster in a frame here right in my place.
Oh, really?
Mr. America, 1980. It's right over here. The guy it's a mythical bodybuilder holding a light is coming out of his hands.
It was in California, right? It was in California.
Yeah. I've had this thing ever since 1980.
40 years.
Yeah. It's like an artistic picture, so I put it up on the wall, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that was an interesting show. You know, Gary Leonard, he had competed before that, right? He didn't win, though.
He took second to Ray Mansour the year before.
Okay, right. So he was more or less the heir apparent to win.
Yeah.
What was the top five there, John? Do you have it listed?
By then they were holding it in weight classes. So in the heavyweight, Gary Leonard was first. Greg DeFerro was second. Lance Frayer was third. John Kemper fourth. And Billy Arlen was fifth.
Billy Arlen was from Texas, I remember.
Yeah. And John Kemper was a great bodybuilder from New Jersey. He was
Diamond Jim, famous Jimmy, he had 2 years. Yeah, in Jersey. I knew John Kemper, later became a IFBB official. Real nice guy.
Yeah.
I knew him pretty well, John. Nice guy.
Of course, he passed away a few years ago.
Yeah, nice guy, though, you know. And of course, Lance Dreher. Very thick. Another guy with, tremendous arms.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, he's a.
I remember that show because I was in the teenage Mr. Central USA in August of 1980, and Lance went in it for some reason. He was already like a national level competitor, but I remember in Chicago, he was like a legend. Like people like, oh my God, Lance Dreher, you know, everybody thought for sure he was going to win Mr. America. And he went in that show and I was blown away. I was like 17 years old. I was like, oh my God, this guy's like a Greek God. You know, he's going to,
I thought for sure he was going to win the Mr. America. I couldn't believe he got third place. He was so his arms were so big.
Yeah, his arms were gigantic, were just huge. I mean, he was another guy that fit into that category of, you know, you got to see him in person to really appreciate the thickness this guy had.
Yeah, yeah,
really thick. Little blocky though. I think that's why
he was.
That's why he never reached kind of the elite stage of you know, like a professional Mr. Olympia type.
Yeah,
because he was a little bit too square, a little bit too blocky, thick but blocky.
He kind of had like short arms and short legs, didn't he?
Exactly right. Yes, he did. Yeah. So
threw off his symmetry a little bit.
Yeah, but he had some really good. I think he had a really good back too. If I remember.
Huge back. Yeah, super wide back. Yeah,
very wide back. Yeah. And who was second again?
Greg DeFerro.
Oh, Greg. Yeah, I knew Greg very well.
Yeah.
I actually trained with him a couple of times. They used to call him Rocky.
Yeah.
Because he slightly resembled Sylvester Stallone. He was a nice guy, Greg. And, man, I'll tell you, he trained hard, that guy.
Greg won the international that year, too, in the Olympia.
Yeah, another guy with really great arms. I remember working arms with him once at Gold's Gym. We were doing barbell curls, and he curled until like the bar literally dropped out of his hands.
Yeah,
he slammed it so hard on the bench. I thought the bench was going to break. The bar looked almost bent. I mean, you know, and he very heavy on tricep pushdown. I was in pretty good shape. I couldn't keep up with the guy as far as the weights. He was a very intense trainer. A really nice guy too. He's from New Jersey.
Yeah.
I remember he lived in a place called Cherry Hill, New Jersey. It was called.
Oh, okay.
He showed up years later. Tried to give me one of the first Masters, Mr. Olympia. Unfortunately, he wasn't in shape at all. He had a lot of hard times. He had a marriage went sour, and his wife cleaned him out. He told me. And Bill Grant and I hung out with him, and. It was very sad because he was very depressed. And I remember taking Bill Grant aside. I said, you know, Greg is like really depressed. I mean, somebody needs to talk. This guy looks like he's going to commit suicide. He was that bad off, you know?
What did he die of when he died?
You know, I don't know. He didn't kill himself, did he? I don't know.
I don't think so. I remember he passed away, but I don't remember what it was that killed him.
I think it was cardiovascular disease, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'd have to look it up.
Yeah,
but I felt really bad when he died because he was always nice to me, always a nice guy, you know. And like when he was in his peak, he was a top bodybuilder,
super thick. I mean, for an amateur, especially, he was super thick.
Very thick arms, very good arms, you know. And Gary Leonard, this is a guy I never really knew. Did you interviewed him, right?
Yeah, I interviewed him. Yeah, real nice guy.
It seems like, but this is a guy who I never actually met. He's one of the few guys of that era. Never spoke to him, never met him, never saw him train. I know nothing about him except, didn't he become a law enforcement officer after he bodybuilding or something?
Maybe. Wasn't he from Fresno?
Yeah, he was from Fresno.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I knew very little about the guy. He had a nice build, though.
Yeah.
You know, nice build, but I know almost nothing about that guy.
Yeah, he had a real, for a heavyweight, he had a real symmetrical build. Not a huge guy, but very symmetrical, very well performed, and real cut, real nice definition.
He was one of those guys that, for some reason, I can't explain why, he never got the publicity that a lot of the other guys got. And there was another guy like that who also won the America. He was from Flint, Michigan. If you can't remember his name, he had big legs. And he also passed away a couple of years ago. This guy had nothing. This is a guy who won the the AAU America. No publicity at all after that. Nothing.
What year?
Oh God, I wish I could remember this guy's name. I know he was in. He had like his own construction company. I tried to find out why. I always wondered why he died. You know, he died very relatively young, but he won the America. He competed in the NABBA Universe. And then he just dropped off, and it was never, you know, had a nice build, big calves. But this guy stands out to me because I was always curious about him because no publicity, nothing. A guy who won the American could be nothing, not an article, not a thing, nothing.
Wow.
The same with Gary Leonard. There was like relatively little publicity about the guy, which I can't explain why. I mean, if I was a writing for Weider in 80, but if I was, I would have done a story on the guy for sure.
It was in the 1980s that he won?
this guy, I think, won it in the 70s. Oh, God, what year was it? 74, no, who was in 74? Was that Mihalik?
Ron Thompson?
That's it, Ron Thompson. That's the guy.
Yeah, you're right. He didn't get much publicity at all.
Ron Thompson's the guy. That guy was always a curiosity to me because I remember trying to find articles on the guy.
Yeah.
And there was, because usually when a guy went to the America and then he goes in the universe, there's somebody writes an article on him.
Yeah.
Now, try and find an article on this guy. You'll see.
Yeah, you're right.
There's an article about him winning the contest, but that's it. Mm-hmm. Nothing, no training articles, nothing, no photos, nothing.
Now, I don't know. The guys before that, you got Dickerson in 70, you had Casey in 71, you had Mihalik in 72, Jim Morris 73. And then he was 74, but yeah, you're right. You never hear nothing about him.
I mean, those other guys all had some publicity, that article.
Sure.
But I don't know whether it was because Ron Thompson either didn't want the publicity or didn't care about it. I never knew because he's a guy I never met. I know that a friend of mine competed against him. The guy who I trained in the 60s, a guy named Pete Caputo, competed against Ron Thompson. And I'd seen one photo of him in the – he had won some Junior America, Ron Thompson. I think that's what Pete competed in. And he won it. Ron Thompson won. I said to Pete, I said, how does this guy Thompson look? He looks pretty good. He says, oh, yeah, he's good. He looks good. He's got real big calves and stuff. He's pretty good, you know. That's all he said. Hmm. But I never knew anything about this guy.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised when I read one day that the guy died. And, you know, I tried to find the cause of death, never found anything, nothing, nothing. Not a thing. I don't know what he died from or anything.
Hmm.
Interesting, you know.
Well, in the light heavyweights that year at the 80 America, Bronston Austin beat Ron Tufel.
I knew Bronston Austin.
Yeah.
Bronston was a really nice guy, very nice. He trained at Gold's Gym for a while. Very nice guy, super. Trained very hard.
Did he?
He was one of those really responsive guys. Never got out of shape, but he started training hard about 2 weeks before the show.
Oh, wow.
He looked great. I mean, he changed his body in 2 weeks, like a Frank Zane type.
Great biceps, right?
Yeah, great bicep. Real peak,
like Albert Beckles.
Real peak bicep.
And he had a hard look. His whole body was real hard. Real
hard looking.
Yeah.
When he trained for the show, he'd get harder and harder every day.
Wow.
I don't know what he did. I don't know whether it was a genetic thing, but
yeah.
But I remember him being a very soft-spoken, very nice guy.
Yeah.
Very nice guy.
He was from Danville, Illinois, which I grew up in Illinois.
Is that right? Yeah. I talked to him quite a bit back then. Yeah. And who was after him? Oh, Rod was a good friend.
Rod Tufel, yeah.
Rod Tufel, yeah. I knew him very well, too.
You look at Rod Tufel's career, I mean, I think the first America he did was 76. And I don't think he won the short class there. I think Pat Neve won the short class that year. But after that, he was winning the short class every year, like 77, 78, 79. And then now it goes to light heavyweights, and he takes second.
Well, Ron did not have an aesthetic physique at all.
Yeah.
Very chunky looking, you know. But he had extremely deep abdominals. I mean, really deep abdominals.
Really good abdominals.
Kind of thick waist, but very deep abdominals. He had pretty good arm development, you know. Kind of chunky looking legs and stuff like that, but he had an overall body, just didn't have good aesthetics. So,
yeah.
You know, he was very mad. I can't remember which show. He lost the contest to Tony Pearson.
78.
Was it the American 78?
Yeah, America.
I remember he was very annoyed about that.
I think that was probably his peak, right?
Yeah, that was the best he ever was. And he was very veiny. He was very vascular for that show. And he was very unhappy because he thought that, he felt he was much more heavily muscled than he felt that Tony was you know, good, but he felt that he just had a lot more muscle than Tony and should have won.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think I told you the story. Ron had this tattoo of some sort of dragon on his arm there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny today when you have all these guys, you know, competing with tattoos, but Ron felt it detracted from his physique. He even thought that it was costing him in contests. He thought that the tattoo was obscuring his, you know, shoulder and arm definition. So
yeah.
He decided to go to some quack doctor, and the guy used some sort of – I don't know whether he tried to burn it off. I don't know. But I remember the poor Ron, he had a bunch of scar tissue on his arm. in other words, it almost would have been better to leave that tattoo.
Yeah.
Like the skin was deformed.
Yeah.
You know, today I'm sure they have better methods to remove, but back then in the 70s, it was very crude. You know, I felt bad for the guy. You know, I mean, it looked like, you know what it looked like? You ever see these skin of a person that was in a bad fire? That
yeah.
Was burnt?
Yeah.
That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, he took off the tattoo to make the arm look better, and it made it look worse.
Right. What's amazing about him is how good he was at a young age. I just looked up his birthday. He was born in 57. So that means in 76, when he went in the America, he was 19, and he got stuck in place. That's crazy.
Very young. Yeah, he was very young. Unfortunately, the guy
– in 78, he was 21.
21.
Wow.
Just a young guy, you know. But I remember, unfortunately, after he became a heavy alcoholic. You know,
yeah.
And he literally one of those guys that drank himself to death. Very sad, you know, because he was a nice guy. Ron was a nice guy.
Sometimes you see that in bodybuilding where these guys are so good at young age and they kind of reach their peak in their early 20s and then they go down after that, you know.
Right, yeah. It's like some of these child actors, you see.
Yeah.
I mean, they're big, they're superstars as a child actor.
And they go downhill.
Macaulay Culkin, whatever his name is, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Going Home, with that movie made. The guy just went nowhere, and then he got into drugs and alcohol himself. You know, they get so frustrated. They're thinking their careers they're going to continue, but once they're not cute anymore, nobody's interested in them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, Shirley Temple, who's the biggest probably child actress in history, was such a prodigy that she was accused of being a dwarf. Not a dwarf, a midget. They thought she was a midget because they couldn't believe any kid could act and dance and talent.
So much talent.
An adult, right? She actually saved a movie studio. I think it was MGM when it went bankrupt. She single-handedly, her movies saved an entire movie studio. But what happened is as she got older, she tried to make a couple of movies in the late 40s, never went anywhere. And then she just retired. Of course, then she went into government. She was the ambassador to the United Nations and somewhere in Africa or something like that. So she had a good career. Married a guy in black. She was Shirley Temple Black.
Yeah.
You know, and she passed away a couple of years ago, but it's the same thing. Some of these bodybuilders, I mean, they're great teenage bodybuilders.
Yeah.
But for some reason, when they get older, it's like they just burn out or don't reach their potential. I don't know why.
Yeah. So he's like in the 1980s, he was 23 and he was already starting to lose his peak, you know?
Yeah, already. Yeah. I don't know his personal life, so I don't know what literally drove him to drink.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be the bodybuilding career, but it might have entered into it. The fact that, you know, he might have thought he'd be like an elite bodybuilder.
Yeah, he never made it.
I can see that too. Might have been into it, why he, you know, turned to drink like that, you know. Very sad.
Here, let me read some of these other guys that were in this, because you had Bronson Austin in first, Ron Tufel in second, Ernie Santiago, who went on to win the Mystery USA, he was third.
He lived in Hawaii.
I
knew Ernie. He's another guy who I used to talk to him all the time at Gold's. Very muscular, great abs, nice build. He has the kind of build that would do well, very well in the classic division. He'd be like a top guy because he had a physique like, I keep forgetting his name, the guy who won.
Bumstead.
He had like a Bumstead type physique, you know?
Yeah.
But here's a guy who I used to talk to, and a couple of years later, I saw him many years later. He shows up, hey, Ernie, how you doing? They had no idea who I was, so I just walked away. It's kind of funny because, you know, you talk to this guy all day, you think he'd remember. He had no idea who I was. You know, I said, all right, you know, a nice guy.
I remember in 83, he won the USA overall as a middleweight. That was really unusual.
Yeah. No, he was very muscular. Like, and I do remember him being from Hawaii.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
And Charles Glass was fourth.
Charles Glass, yeah. You know, Charles Glass, of course, I know him very well. He was, I don't know if you know, did you know that he was the captain of the gymnastic team?
I remember Remember when he did his routine at the 84 Olympia, he was doing handstands and stuff, you know?
Charles Glass was the captain of the gymnastics. When he posed, he'd do these flips all over the stage.
Yeah. He did do a flip at the Olympia.
Nobody could do that except him.
Right.
It almost became his trademark. And I remember interviewing him on – we laugh about it today. In fact, I reminded him that I saw him about a year or two ago, and I reminded him this. I said, Charles, do you remember when we did that interview on – when you were competing in the 80s, we did the interview on your dietary techniques. And I asked you what your contest diet was, and you said you had no contest diet. He says, well, I eat whatever I want. He says, I'll eat French fries and cheeseburgers. And I still get, you know, I'm still shredded. So I don't need to follow any diet. So I said to him, I saw him at one of the Fit Expos about a year ago. And you know, he's much older now. And of course, he's now a top trainer at Gold's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I said to him, Charles, I said, I bet now you can't eat like that, like you did back then when you were competing. You probably have to follow a diet like the rest of us, right? It's wrong. I still eat whatever I want.
No, really? Wow.
He told me that. Yeah. We both laughed, you know.
Jim Seitzer was fifth. Remember Jim Seitzer from Ohio?
Yes, I vaguely remember him, yeah.
I interviewed him on my show, too.
Yeah.
Paul Love was seventh. Paul Love, the great bodybuilder.
Yeah, from, where was it?
California, right? Was he in California?
San Jose.
Yeah.
San Jose, California.
He promoted the 83 Nationals, remember?
That's right, which I attended. That was where Bob Parris won.
Yeah.
And
he was Flex Wheeler's father-in-law, right?
Yeah. His daughter, she was an identical twin.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name. Marilyn or something? I can't remember her
Madeline?
Name.
Was it Madeline?
Madeline, I think it was. Yeah. She married, as you say, Flex Wheeler. And she was in the room when Flex had a problem where they called in at the Arnold show. She was his fiance at the time. They called me in the room because Flex was having some medical problem. And I remember she was crying her eyes out because she thought that Flex was dying. I'll never forget that.
Wow.
You know, she was actually in tears. She was so messed up, you know.
Yeah.
She was a very, very pretty girl.
Very pretty. Yeah, I remember her.
Yeah. Paul was a nice guy. I spoke to him quite a few times.
Yeah, he just died a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah. He had nice physique, you know, yeah. Good at small waist. You know, nice guy, though. Nice guy. You know, I keep saying they're nice guys, but I know I probably sound like Will Rogers, who always said, I never met a man I didn't like. But the truth is, I have to say, most of the guys I thought were nice. I'm not laying it on. I genuinely thought they were all nice guys. I can't think of anybody who was a real bastard other than Sergio Oliva. I told you the story of.
Right.
The only one that stands out.
Yeah.
And his son is just the opposite. His son's a great guy.
Yeah.
You know, so what can I say?
That's kind of how I felt, you know, I was at the Olympia a couple of weeks ago and I was interviewing a lot of these people and I thought a lot of them were really great people, you know, like that Oksana Grishina we were talking about, she seemed like just such a genuinely nice person, you know.
Yeah. Or, you know, Brandon Curry, when I after he won the Olympia, I saw him at, let's see, what was it? It was the thing for Franco, the Franco Memorial.
Oh.
Arnold, it was at a hotel in Santa Monica. And he was wearing this suit. He looked at immense shoulders like this.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm wearing a sport check, and I feel like, my God, I feel like some fat guy who just fell off a truck standing next to this guy. I walked up to him, and I said, it was almost the same conversation I had with Phil Heath. Because I had only met Brandon Curry one time many years ago. He competed in a show at the Veterans Memorial in Culver City. And I was with Bill Grant, and Bill Grant knew him already and he introduced me. And I remember saying to Brandon Curry, this is kind of weird. Remember, this is like 10 years before he won the Olympia, or maybe even longer. I said, you know, I got to tell you, you know, you have the potential, I said to him, to go all the way. You could be Mr. Olympia. It's amazing I said that to him all those years ago. You know, so before I told him that, I went up to him and I said, Brandon, my name is Jerry. Oh, Jerry, I read your stuff all the time. Almost exactly what Philly, and I didn't think I would know me, you know. He said, oh, yeah, I'm a big fan of yours. I read your stuff all the time, he goes, you know. And then I reminded him of the story. I said, you know, we've already met at Culver City years ago. You competed and won a show. And I told you that you had the potential to be Mr. Olympia. And he laughed. He says, well, it looks like you were right, huh? I said, yeah. He was a nice guy, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the middleweights, our mutual friend Richard Baldwin took first place in the middleweights.
Yeah, Richard, one of my good friends, Richard Baldwin. Yeah, he's what they call the Apollo type physique. You know, very symmetrical, slimmer, kind of along the lines of a Frank Zane type. You know.
Yeah.
But great abs, small waist. You know, great. Richard had terrific tricep development. You know, the funny thing is, the guy is what, 74 or 5? I don't remember offhand, but he still has great on. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, I see him on Facebook all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, he put a picture of himself. He's training at home now because of this gym's being closed, and he just has dumbbells. He put up an arm shot. His arm looks great.
Yeah.
He's using a pair of dumbbells.
Yeah.
You know, he's still got it. You know, and he told me not long ago. He said he put an inch on his arm. I said, Richard, that's unbelievable because you're not supposed to be able to put any muscle on after 70.
Yeah.
You realize you're going against nature? I don't know how you power to you, man.
He needs to get in shape every year too. He'll like diet down and get in shape just to see what he looks like. That's amazing.
Well, he got that from Frank Zane because Frank Zane, every year, even long after he stopped competing, every year he would choose a certain time of the year to train like he's training for the contest. He'd get in top shape, take a couple of pictures. He'd do that every year. I don't know if he's still doing it, but he did it for many years after he stopped competing. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, just the hell of it, you know.
And then the lightweights, Ken Passarello won. Remember him?
Oh, sure. Ken Passarello. This is the guy I always tell the story. I mentioned him in one of my articles because this is a guy who started. He's one of those rarities among bodybuilders. You know, most bodybuilders start out thin. I don't know if you were like that, John, but the natural physique. Yeah. They tend to be thin. Arnold was thin. You can go on down the list. Very rarely do you have a bodybuilder start out as fat or obese. Because from a scientific point of view, it's a lot easier to get cut and ripped if you start out thin because you don't have as many fat cells to reduce, blah, blah, blah. Well, Ken Passarello, he was from Connecticut, if I remember. He was an exception to the rule. He was like a 350-pound fat guy. I mean, bloated, big, fat guy. I don't remember how he got into bodybuilding, but not only did he get his body weight down, but at one of the shows, they were brought out this bioelectrical impedance, which at the time was a new method of measuring body fat.
Mm-hmm.
He had the lowest body fat measured of any of out of 50 competitors. This was the lowest body fat. And this is the guy who was a huge, big, fat, obese guy, you know, just only about, 5 years before.
Wow.
It's amazing.
That's crazy. He was a lightweight bodybuilder.
Yeah, think about that. I mean, this guy was like just like this. I mean, you know, really fat as a house. And he got it all the way down. I mean, and if you look at photos of the guy, if you could find them, take a close look at the photos at his waist. You could see a little bit of a little excess tissue on the side there. That was from where the stomach was stretched out so much that even though he lost all the fat, it still had a little bit of, you know, like loose skin there.
Yeah.
Because he got rid of it all. You know, he was fat. I don't know how long he was fat, but my point being, he was one of those rare exceptions of an obese guy that became a top bodybuilder, this Ken Passarello.
He could have made a ton of money if he would have marketed that, you know, from before to after.
You know, there's a guy who really missed his mark, man.
Yeah.
That guy could have made a fortune. Because if he would have showed, I think I remember seeing a before picture. Man, if he would have written a book about how to lose body fat and become a champion from a fat, obese guy to a champion bodybuilder, the most muscular people on earth, man, everybody would have bought that. The guy could have made millions.
Yeah, I
wish I would have known. If I would have known the guy, I would have offered the right to book myself.
Right. You got a percentage of it.
yeah, you know.
Well, let's talk about the universe because that's not very discussed that much. It was the IFBB Mr. Universe, which they called the World Amateur Championships. They held it in the Philippines that year.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because nobody from America won their class. That's one of the few years, I think, where nobody from America. Now, we'll go to the lightweight first. Hans Sollmeyer from Austria took first place, and Ken Passarella was second. So Ken did really good, but Hans Sollmeyer won. And I remember Hans Sollmeyer. He's very, very shredded, very ripped.
Hans Sollmeyer is one of the guys that had a real bad effect from diuretics.
He died, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he actually died from diuretics. One of the rare cases of that. Yeah. Yeah. That probably accounted for partially kind of why he was so ripped.
Yeah. He was. I remember he was strided. His chest was strided all over.
Yeah.
Now, in the middleweights, Jorma Raddi from Finland. Remember him with the huge lats?
Yeah.
Great arms.
I think he might have recently died also, just recently.
Did he really? Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
I think I saw something about that. I could be wrong about that, but I could have sworn I saw something about that. He recently died. I don't know what the cause was.
Yeah, you're right. He died in actually 2007.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you looked it up?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember just vaguely that reading something about him. Because I recognized the name right away when I saw that.
I didn't know he died. That's a shame.
Yeah, I looked at that and I said, I remember that guy. I remember that guy. I think I actually met him when he came over here.
Yeah, I remember he had really good arms and really wide lat, like Franco lat.
Huge lats. Yeah.
But he didn't really have much of anything else. Like his legs
legs are very mediocre. Yeah.
Yeah. Even his chest and stuff. But he just had those two big body parts.
That's it. That's right. Yeah.
And Richard Baldwin was second, so he did good.
Yeah, Richard was second. That's great. Yeah.
So Richard took second in the universe 2 years in a row because he took second in 79 to Roy Duvall, and then he took second to Jorma Raddi in 1980.
Right. And this was the IFBB?
IFBB. And it was held in the Philippines. And I remember I actually have the videotape from it. I bought it from Wayne Glash.
Right.
And I remember, was it the president or they call him the president of the Philippines was there.
He was there, yeah.
Yeah.
The dictator. He was a dictator.
That's wasn't his wife the one with all the shoes?
I was right. The wife. I was just going to say, his wife had like 10,000 pairs of shoes.
What was her name?
Oh, I can't remember her name offhand.
Oh, Imelda Marcos, right? Imelda Marcos.
That's it. She was famous for her shoes. She had like 10,000 shoes. I don't ask me to explain that. I have no one to explain
that. I guess this guy loved bodybuilding, and Ben Weider, that's why he held it in the Philippines.
He was a real fan of bodybuilding, that guy, Marcos, real fan.
Yeah.
I remember Ben Weider used to visit him all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he was trying to get Marcos' support to get bodybuilding Olympics, so he'd go there quite frequently because Marcos was like a fanatical bodybuilding fan.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. Another guy who this might surprise you, was at one time the world's richest man, J. Paul Getty.
Oh, I remember. He used to go to the NABBA Universe, right?
To go to the NABBA Universe. In fact, there's a famous photo. You mentioned Boyer Cope, him presenting Boyer the winning trophy when Boyer won the universe. It was
I remember that.
I mean, wow. Getty loved to work out. He was really called himself a physical culturist, is the way he expressed it.
Yeah,
he loved working out. He liked to box. One time, he even boxed Jack Dempsey, the famous. Dempsey said he wasn't bad, you know, but. I guess what happened was J. Paul Getty was a young guy back then, you know, and he got a little carried away with Jack, and Jack gave a little shot and knocked him out. So, I had to teach him. You know, it was like a baby went like this, and boom, Getty was.
Was he American? He was American, right?
He was an American, yeah. But he last couple of years he bought a big mansion. He lived in London.
Oh.
And he was so cheap. That he put a payphone in his mansion. He actually installed the payphone. And now he explained why in his book. He says, when I was announced as the world's richest man, people suddenly started thinking that I should pay everybody's bills.
Right.
He said, when I was invited to dinner, if there'd be 50 people there, the waiter would suddenly bring me the check, even though I was one of the invited people. He says, and when people stayed at my house, they would run up my phone bill into the thousands. They figured, well, I'm the richest man, so I don't care. And I just got tired of it, so I put a payphone in there. That was his explanation. Yeah.
That's funny. The light heavyweight class, Bronson Austin, who we just talked about, he got second to Johnny Fuller from England.
Oh, Johnny Fuller, yeah. Somebody just put a picture of him on Facebook just the other day. Johnny Fuller, I used to talk to him when he was from when the gym, Gold's Gym was on 2nd Street. I remember talking to him, and he startled me because he said to me, did you know he competed in marathons?
I remember that, yeah. He was a strange guy. He had a lot of strange, quirky things about him.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember when he told me that, because he had these big legs, big calves.
Yeah, real thick.
Right, and my marathoners were always like these skinny, lean guys, you know. I said, Johnny, you compete in marathons? He says, yeah. I said, doesn't it affect your muscle size? He says, no. He says, he said, I've been a runner all my life, he says, and to me, it's natural. You know, it doesn't do any. It's fun. He says, I don't lose any muscle at all.
Yeah.
And I look, well, I'm not going to argue with you. Look at your man. I said, I just got to tell you, I've never met a competitive bodybuilder who also ran marathons. You're the first and last I think I'll ever meet. And he laughed.
Yeah, I remember he used to do 32 reps of every set. Remember that? 32 reps.
Yeah, 32. I can never. Why that figure?
Right. Why that number? Right.
Why not 30? Why not 25? That'd be 32. It was some sort of magic number, you know?
Right. I don't know. Right. And then I remember his diet was really weird, too. He had weird ideas about his diet.
Yeah, I don't remember it, but I remember it was very eccentric, this guy. Nice guy.
Very thick. I mean, back then, he had a real thick physique.
Very, very thick. Very thick, yeah. I mean, he had these really thick pecs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He passed away a couple of years ago, too. I'm not sure what happened to him. But
yeah, he died 2006.
Yeah. Yeah, nice guy. Yeah.
And then Bronson Austin, who really looked good at that contest, he was in second.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Bronson was a top guy back then, one of the top guys. And
John Torelli, we were talking about earlier, he got sixth in that contest.
Yeah, John Torelli. He was I told John when he interviewed me, you know, that I wasn't laying it on to him, just like I told you. I said, you know, I really think you were underrated, I told him, as a bodybuilder. I said, because, and I said, let me explain why. I said, you, and I told him my philosophy again, you have a complete body, head to toe. You had all the muscle groups. You had really great symmetry and proportion.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you were underrated. I mean, I think that, you know, you were a lot better than people gave. I know you won titles, but I still think that you were a lot better than people gave you credit for.
Yeah.
He was very happy. He said, coming from you, it's an honor. He goes, you know, he really appreciated it, but I meant it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that if I didn't mean it. You know, my philosophy, I think I talked about this, John, like Franco Colombo, I didn't like his physique. So I never gave him a compliment. It's not like I was mean. I just didn't want to lie to the guy.
Yeah.
If I don't think something is true, I'd rather not say it.
Yeah.
And I was never impressed by Franco's body. And he picked up on that, and he never liked me because of that.
Right.
That's why I was surprised when they invited me to his memorial.
Yeah.
the guy never liked.
He didn't know it, though.
No, I mean, if he was there, he probably would have said, look, get the hell out of here. Yeah. Get out of here. And he'd probably call me out. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's impressive that the judges rewarded someone like John Torelli, who had a symmetrical physique, was not a mass monster, but he was still able to place high in pro level shows in the 1980s because he just had that nice symmetrical physique, you know.
Right. Yeah. You hit it right on the head. That's why, you know, he didn't win a Mr. Olympia, so because he didn't have the mass.
Yeah.
But you know, still had a great physique. I mean, the guy, really nice physique, Torelli. Yeah.
So in the heavyweight class, you remember Hubert Metz? Hubert Metz was the winner in the heavyweight class.
I just saw a picture of Hubert Metz.
He's in still great shape, isn't he?
He's something like 80 years old. And
he's still in great shape.
He was flexing his arm. He always had this little round bicep.
Yeah.
You know? And when he's flexing his arm, now he's an older guy. Because, you know, everybody's arm shrinks when they get past a certain age. So he's got this, it looks like a little golf ball sitting on his arm.
Yeah.
You know? You know, obviously he still works out. So more
work out, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, yeah. He was, yeah, I remember him well. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of an odd looking physique, right? He was very tall, long legs.
Right, right.
Just the muscle shapes were a little different, but He was still good enough to win the Mr. Universe.
Yeah, he was good. Not an overly aesthetic physique. You wouldn't call him like a beautiful physique type of thing. But he was muscular. When he was in shape, he was very muscular. He really was. He was in good shape, very well defined, that type of thing. You know.
Yeah. Now Gary Leonard, who was Mr. America, he was in sixth, so he really dropped the ball at that contest.
Holy cow! I wonder what happened there. I don't know.
Well, I heard that I can't remember when the America was, but I think the World Amateur Championships was like 2 months later, and he couldn't stay on his diet, and he went off his diet.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's what happens.
Yeah.
Too bad.
When I interviewed Lance Dreher was third. And he told me that some of the officials from America called him up and said, can you do the universe? Because it looks like Leonard isn't going to make it.
Wow.
Yeah, because he was way off.
Oh, man. It's too bad they didn't have the contest closer to the American. He probably would have done a lot better.
Yeah. You were mentioning why Gary didn't get much publicity. Maybe it was because I remember Gary came back, I think, in 1986, and they let him get his pro card, you know.
Oh, okay.
But if he would have won that class at the universe in 1980, he would have been a pro in 1981. You know, I mean, he probably lost 5 good years from his peak, you know, from losing that universe.
You're probably right. I just remember seeing him in a police uniform. I believe he became some sort of law enforcement guy afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was unusual that the Americans didn't win one class, you know, that wasn't normal back then.
That is unusual. That's very rare.
Well, before I let you go, Jerry, let's talk about one more show, which was the Night of the Champions. So 1980, of course, they didn't have the Arnold Classic. That didn't start till like 10 years later. But the Night of the Champions was probably the second biggest show of the year, you know, compared to the Olympia. So Chris Dickerson was in first. Robbie was in second. Roy Callender was in third. Ed Corney was fourth. And Casey was fifth.
Wow. I wasn't at that show for some reason. I don't know why. I wasn't there.
So that was only 2 years after it started, right? Because it started in 78.
Yeah. I think wasn't the first one a Robbie, if I remember.
Robbie won the first two, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So then Chris won the third. Okay. Yeah. That was always a good contest. When I rode for Weider, that was that contest I reserved for myself, because you know it allowed me to visit my family in New York.
Yeah, go back to New York. Yeah,
it's usually held in the spring. You know, when New York was nice in the spring.
Yeah, right.
So I would always insist on covering that show for the magazine. So
wasn't it at the Beacon Theater?
It was at the Beacon Theater. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Beacon Theater. I used to love going back for that contest. It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I'd stay in Manhattan there, and I'd go to all the bookstores and stuff. You'd walk around.
Yeah.
And they're all gone now, you know. But fun back then. Yeah, it was a pretty good contest.
So now Dickerson, that's amazing because I just mentioned that it was between him and Casey. They were trading off shows. Like Chris would win one, Casey won the next one. I remember Casey won the one in Louisiana, which I remember that because he was from Louisiana.
That's right.
And then by the time they got to the last one, Chris was good enough to win, and Casey dropped down to fifth. And then by the time they got to the Olympia, Casey was way off, and then Chris was in the greatest shape of his life, and he almost won it.
Right, right.
That's amazing that Chris Dickerson was able to peak so much. He must have just never gotten off his diet, you know?
I don't think he did.
Yeah.
He was very strict. I don't think he never let himself get out of shape.
Yeah.
And I think that was the trick. He was always like 2 weeks away from the contest.
Yeah, condition. Yeah.
You know, he was one of the few guys. There was a couple of guys that did. There was a guy named Larry. I can't remember his name. Larry Jackson. Did you ever hear Larry Jackson?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Larry competed. He was a friend of mine. He competed a couple of shows. And this guy was always in shape, always in shape.
Hmm.
And I mean, always looked like he could compete like the next day.
Yeah.
And I said, because you know, remember, all the other guys, you see him after a show, they smooth out. They gain weight. Like Gary Leonard did, you know. And I said to him once, Larry, how is it that you stay in this kind of shape? So I remember him telling me, I never go off my diet. I said, what do you eat? He says, I eat like skinned chicken and what do you say, fish, you know, basically like, you know, pure diet. I said, don't you ever like crave ice cream or?
Mm-hmm.
He says, never. He says, I never touch that stuff.
Yeah.
He says, I like eating chicken. He goes,
yeah.
And so sure enough, I mean, the proof's in the pudding. The guy had abs. I mean, no body fat. I mean, if you could do that, that's the result. I think that's what Chris's secret was.
I'm surprised Chris was able to come into the Olympia so thick looking, because he had a lot of size too. You would think dieting all the time, you'd start to lose muscle and flatten out, you know?
Well, I'm not sure what he did for that. It's hard to say, you know, I mean, but I mean, he might've just increased the calories, you know?
Yeah.
If you're in good enough shape and your body fat's low enough, you could probably boost the calories, get an extra size.
Yeah.
Increase the, maybe enough where, you know, you get that extra size without, you know, losing excessive amounts of definition.
Because your metabolism will be faster, right?
Right. You have to, you don't want to have an excess carbohydrate where you get a little water retention and bloating. You could avoid that. It's possible to do. You can do it. Yeah.
I asked Chris about that when I interviewed him, and I said, you know, how did you stay in shape all that the whole year? And he said, well, after the show, he goes, I junk out the next day, like on Sunday, and then I get right back on the diet on Monday. You know?
There you go.
Yeah.
See, that junk out wouldn't affect him at all.
No.
If he goes right back on the diet, it's like nothing.
Yeah.
It's not all it's going to do is make him feel good.
Yeah.
It's not going to have any adverse effect whatsoever.
Yeah.
So there's your answer right there. You know, he just stayed on the diet all the time.
Now, Robbie got second. So Robbie won it in 78, 79, then 1980 gets second. It's interesting, though, Robbie didn't do the Olympia that year.
I wonder why.
I think maybe he knew Arnold was going to do it.
I have to ask Robbie next time I see him why he decided to go in. Interesting. Or maybe he was discouraged about losing the two prior years.
The Zane.
And maybe he just didn't want to go there and afford losing again.
Yeah.
I don't know what his reasoning was.
Right.
I'll have to ask him that, you know. It'd be funny if he tells me, well, I knew that Arnold was going to go in and want to waste the time.
Yeah. I read his book, and I think he mentioned that. I think he did mention that he heard the rumors.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Well, in that case, it was a smart move on Robbie's
part. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he saved himself a big trip to Australia, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So let me read some of the names on this list here, because it's interesting. Samir was only 10th.
Yeah.
But Tom Platz was 12th. And then when he went to the Olympia, he was in great shape.
Yeah. And that was what year was that?
1980. So this was in May, and then the Olympia was in September, October, you know.
Oh, Platz got 12th. Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh.
And McAway was 8th. So that was before he was starting to reach his peak when he was working with Vince Gironda, you know.
Right.
And Ed Corney got 4th, so that's really good placing for Ed Corney with all those other guys, you know, because he was getting older by that time.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. But I think Ed's posing really helped him a lot, because nobody could pose like Ed.
Yeah.
So that really probably, you know, gave him a little bit of an edge, you know.
And Steve Mihalik was 6th.
Steve, wow. Steve went on to win the American 72, I believe, right?
Yeah, so this was 8 years later, so that was pretty good placing for him. And then Harold Poole was 11th.
Harold Poole, yeah. Jeez.
Yeah, all those years later, from the 60s to 1980.
I don't remember what Harold Poole looked like in 80. I wonder how he looked in 80.
Yeah.
I'm sure he probably didn't look as good as he did in the 60s, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I remember training, me and Bill Grant trained with him right around that time at Gold's, and he was in good shape.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, so I don't know. I can't explain the placing. I don't know.
Bill was in the Sonics.
Who?
Bill Grant. He was in that show too.
What did he place?
7th.
7th, okay.
So he did pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was 6th?
Mihalik. And then Casey was 5th. Ed Corney was 4th. Roy Callender was 3rd. So Roy went in the Olympia later that year. He looked great that year.
Yeah.
And Robbie was 2nd.
Yeah. Yeah. Top guys there. Yeah.
That's kind of a contest I think that was forgotten about, 1988 Night of the Champions, because everybody focuses on the Olympia, you know, so nobody really talks about the Night of the Champions for that year.
No, I actually forgot it myself.
I did too. I was looking at the list. I was surprised to see these names and where everybody placed.
Yeah.
Especially Platz taking 12th and then He looked really good at that Olympia and took ninth, you know.
Yeah. I don't get it. I'm not sure the reason.
Probably didn't peak. Just probably didn't peak for it. He probably was saving it all for the Olympia, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. That's probably it. Yeah.
All right, Jared. Well, I'll let you go. Thanks for joining me again for the 1980 discussion.
All right.
And next time we'll talk about 1990, and okay. we'll finish our wrap up for the end of the year.
All right. Sounds good. I hope people enjoy the show.
Yeah, we talked about a lot of good stuff from the old days. So
a lot of anecdotes that you didn't read in the magazine.
That's right. And Jared, before we go, mention your newsletter one more time.
It's appliedmetabolics.com.
Okay.
It's Applied Metabolics. It's a monthly newsletter. It comes out on the first of every month, 30 to 50 pages. I cover nutrition, exercise science, hormonal therapy, like, you know, testosterone replacement therapy, anti-aging research, ergogenic aids, a whole bunch of topics, women's health and fitness. And it's all, you know, evidence-based, science-based. And, you know, the advantage of it is, there's a couple of advantages. Number one is my years of writing experience, which is 45 years, 10,000 articles. I know how to write. I know how to translate very complex science into readable prose that people will understand.
Right.
Also, is the fact that I also include, as we do here, a lot of anecdotes about my experiences in bodybuilding as a competitive bodybuilder, the people I've known, Arnold, you know, I try and make it entertaining and that kind of stuff. And and you know, if anyone reading that, I just practically guarantee, no matter what their level of education, they will learn something, you know, and hopefully they'll enjoy it. I can't think of a better publication anywhere on the internet than mine. And I've seen quite a few of them. You know, some of them are, you know, pretty good, you know, on nutrition or exercise, but nobody covers the range of topics I do. I cover a lot of topics that you won't find anywhere else, even all over the internet, even in blogs and in videos and stuff like that. So yeah. If people really want to know the truth based on both science and experience, they should subscribe to Applied Metabolics. Again, appliedmetabolics.com.
Yeah, that's what I like when I talk to you, Jerry. You know about all the research, and you're able to explain it. You know,
exactly.
It's not like reading a boring scientific journal, which nobody's going to do. You're able to interpret that and then explain it, which really makes it interesting and it makes it understandable for the average person.
I also see. I try to make it practical. In other words, there's a lot of topics I find interesting, but I always try to keep the audience in mind. And I say, well, would this interest a large number of people, or is it just me? And if it's just me, I won't write about it. I write about something I think a large range of people would find useful. And if it doesn't meet that criteria, I don't write it. So I think a lot of people would like the stuff I write about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much is it again?
$10 a month. You know, I mean, I've had it now for 5 years. I've never raised it. It's it's actually
5 years already.
Yeah, and a lot of the other, you know, digital, but they're three times more money than mine. And they don't even give you as much information. So I think I have the best bargain on the whole internet, if you ask me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I put so much work into it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I just think I think it's definitely a bargain. I mean, I've had a lot of people who subscribe and they send me emails. You know, you should raise the price, Jerry. I mean, you're ripping yourself off.
Yeah.
Giving all this information so cheap and stuff like that. So, and then I get, you know, it doesn't happen anymore, but when I first started it, I get emails from crazy guys who say, why are you charging me? You know, after a while I stopped responding at all to those things, but in the beginning I'd write back, well, let me ask you, do you work at a job? And, you know, they'd write back, well, yeah. I said, well, it's really nice that you work for free. I mean, and they said, what do you mean? I said, well, you work for free, don't you? They say, no, of course not. I said, then why do you expect me to work for free? And that would end the conversation.
Yeah.
When they'd say that, there would be no response, because it suddenly dawned on them that what they're asking was ludicrous.
Right.
That I work my head off and not get paid anything. I mean, what kind of moron would do that?
I know.
I mean, I mean, it's not like I don't have bills to pay. I mean, you know, I'm not, I don't own Amazon. You know what I mean? I have to work, you know?
Right.
So lucky, luckily those guys died out. I don't get that kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah.
But I did when I first, because you know what it was? These people are so used to getting everything for free.
Right. On the internet. Right.
They think that everything, bar none, should be free on the internet.
Unbelievable.
You know? But the truth is, a lot of stuff on the internet isn't worth anything.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, I don't charge for my videos. I put a video on my YouTube channel every week. I don't charge a penny for that. It's free.
Right.
You know, if they don't want to spend it, they can look at the videos. But I mean, my videos can't come close to with the newsletter. There's right. no comparison.
Right.
It's like comparing a headline to an actual news article. That's right. the difference.
All right. Well, I hope more of our listeners support your newsletter and then sign up for
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I hope so too.
All right, Jerry. Well, I'll talk to you next time about 1990. And I thank you again for joining me. I thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Sure. No problem, John. Always good to talk to you.
Okay. Take care. I'll talk to you later. Yeah. Have a good new year too.
You too. You too.
All right, bud.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to our guest, Jerry Branum, for joining us again. And we will have Jerry back again the next couple weeks because we still have to talk about the year 1990 in review. So we've got some longer interviews this year. We usually wrap these up in three episodes, but it seems like we're doing two-parters every time we take on a new year. So that's all right. Jerry's got a lot of stories. So we will be back next week to talk about the year 1990. I also want to thank our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine. I want to thank all our Patreon donors. If you're interested in being a Patreon donor and contributing to the show, you can do that on the BodybuildingLegendsShow.com website. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for join Patreon. And before we go, I do want to read this article, which was from a 1980 issue of Iron Man magazine, and it was about the 1980 Night of the Champions. It's called Another Viewpoint of the Night of the Warriors, and it's written by Steve Robinson. And this ran in the same magazine that they did a review with Roger Schwab's article about the 1980 Night of the Champions. All right. It says, I was sent to photograph the IFBB Grand Prix Finals in New York City and was not planning to write about it. However, after seeing the free posing round, I could not help but put my feelings about the greatest bodybuilding idea in history on paper. The Grand Prix circuit shows are used to find out whom the greatest bodybuilder is over a period of time. To win the overall title, the athletes have to stay in shape for the whole circuit, and the bodybuilder who can accumulate the most points in the five shows wins. So far, there's been a contest in Florida, Louisiana, California, Pennsylvania, and now the finals in New York. What I saw on stage in New York were warriors. Warriors with battle fatigue. Five shows in 4 months had finally taken its toll on its champions. Steve Mihalik said to me after the prejudging that he had gone from 215 pounds in the first show to 185 in this show. I had the feeling Steve was glad the Grand Prix was finally coming to an end. All but a few of the bodybuilders had lost some of their sharpness from past shows. One of the men who did not lose any, but in fact improved 85% over past shows, was that of Mr. Youth himself, Ed Corney, who was able to pull himself into fourth place. No one scored a perfect 300 in the show, and the whole contest seemed to be decided in the free posing round. Chris Dickerson must have been the happiest man in the world when he was announced a double winner. Not only did he win the New York contest, but he also took the overall Grand Prix title. For a moment, as he looked out over the packed house at the Beacon Theater, he probably felt as Frank Zane did a few months before him when he won the Mr. Olympia. Chris has placed first in three of the five shows, and second in the other two, which gave him a grand total of 74 overall points. No other star was even close to him. Chris's name is now destined to go down in bodybuilding history and sit next to Larry Scott's, the first Mr. Olympia. Chris is the first Grand Prix winner. No one can take anything away from him. He is a warrior. He is the best. Robbie Robinson was finally beaten at his own show. Robbie has won the New York show since it started 2 years ago. Robbie has improved over the Pittsburgh show, but he still lacked cuts in his legs, and his calves were nowhere to be seen. Robbie must be saving all his energy for one showing this year at the Big O. Roy Callender was winning the contest throughout the first two rounds, but something happened in his free posing. He seemed to forget his routine in places. Roy was not quite as sharp as he was in Pennsylvania. His abs were down. Ed Corney is unbelievable. I've heard people say he should retire, and they don't even know why he entered all of the shows. Well, I hope those people were in New York to see Corney in top shape. Danny Padilla, who was seated by me, could not believe his eyes when he saw Corney walk out on stage for the first time.
The crowd went wild over Corny's posing to My Way, a song that says more for him than I could ever write. Corny proved that at the age of 48, he can still do it his way. Casey Viator was hard hit by the five-show battle. He had lost a lot. His abs were way down from Pennsylvania. He just did not have that glow around him that he had at the other shows. Casey placed second in the overall Grand Prix with 63 points. Boyer Coe, for the first time in all of his years in the IFBB, landed out of the top five. He has broken his consistency record. But Boyer made up for this with a very well-done dual posing routine that he and his new wife did at the night show. Boyer, I'm sure, will be back and in better shape than ever in the near future. Muhammad Makaway did not look quite as sharp as I've seen him in past shows. However, with a little more dieting, he'll be back in the money again. Bill Grant, Steve Mihalik, Carlos Rodriguez, Samir Banute, Tom Platz, Harold Poole, Tony Emmett, and Annabelle Lopez rounded out the field of warriors. If next year's 10 Grand Prix shows are anywhere near as good as this year's five, it'll be something not to miss. All right, so that was a great article that goes along with Roger Schwab's. It's interesting, man. I wish somebody would have filmed that contest. I would have loved to have seen Ed Corny's posing routine, especially since he was in such great shape. From these two reviews, it sounds like Corny was in the best shape of his life at this contest, the 1980 Night of the Champions. And I would have loved to have seen Chris Dickerson also at that show. So it's too bad people weren't videotaping the shows back then. Robbie looked like he was really looking good, too. And Roy Callender, that was interesting. They said he was winning the show up until the posing round. So isn't that interesting that back then, in 1980, the posing could dictate who the winner was, and they would judge those posing rounds separately. So those were the good old days when posing meant something. So thank you to Pat Comer for sending me those two articles, the one we read last week and the one this week. And hopefully we'll have another article for you guys next week as well, when we do our review of 1990 with Jerry Branum. All right, that's it for the show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Keep training hard out there. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Take care.